No debate, no bias, just the news. Brass Tacks with Zucker Jacob.
So welcome to this Brass Tacks podcast. It's weeknights, 9:25 on CNN News 18. My name is Zucker Jacob. I host the show. We've got an action-packed show today from the Parliament. It's a historic session of the Rajya Sabha, 250th session. Plus, you have the protests, the JNU protests that are continuing. We've got some interesting international stories as well. Gotabaya Rajapaksa has gotten elected as the new president of Sri Lanka. We'll be talking about all of that and more. We'll start off with the Parliament session. Very interesting and like I said, historic session, this 250th session of the Rajya Sabha, the upper house. If you go back and look at the Constituent Assembly debates, there was this huge debate really about why the need for two houses, why the need for a lower house, which is through direct elections, and why the need for an upper house, which is not through direct elections. There was a huge back and forth that went on between various luminaries of the Constituent Assembly. And eventually, India decided to have, almost similar to what England has, a bipartisan sort of legislative system where you have one house where members are elected directly by the people, and then another house where members are elected through indirect elections. You know, the interesting thing is, and as the Prime Minister said today in his speech, marking the 250th session of the Rajya Sabha, the Lok Sabha allows for people to have a direct connect with their constituents and with the people of India, because Lok Sabha MPs have to, always have a sense of what's happening on the ground. Whereas the Rajya Sabha MPs, because of the position that they have, they can afford to take the bird's eye view. They can afford to look at the big picture. And you've had numerous luminaries who are, you know, not career politicians, who have been able to contribute to nation building, who have been able to contribute to the legislative business of our country through the Rajya Sabha. So you've had numerous, you know, technocrats, economists, even Manmohan Singh, for example, was a former bureaucrat turned governor of the RBI, then became a full-fledged politician. In this government, for example, people like Dr. S. Jaishankar, who's been a career diplomat, is now the Minister for External Affairs. And again, he's a Rajya Sabha member. So, you know, the house, the upper house, has its own value. There was a time when people were questioning the need for an upper house, because after all, you know, it was seen as a place that only blocks bills. But I think, like the Prime Minister said today, so many technocrats have been able to contribute to nation building through their contributions in the upper house. Like I said, it includes engineers, it includes doctors, economists, journalists, all of whom have contributed in their own way. So we'll be looking at some of the iconic moments in the last 250 sessions of the Rajya Sabha. The other story that's been happening, of course, in Delhi is the JNSU protest, the JNU protest. In fact, students protesting the hike in fees, even though last week there was a partial rollback. Students are still not satisfied. And I think this has become a bit of a familiar feature in JNU. For some reason or the other, we see protests. Back in 2015-16, it was about the so-called seditious comments that were made. And then you had a flare-up between the students and the police. I think a year later, there was something on this national scholarships. Again, there was a flare-up on campus. And now it's on this fee hike. And I think, you know, the amount of coverage that JNU has got over the last three, four years, I don't think JNU has ever got in the history of the existence of this institution. It is a premier university, no doubt about it. But I think at some level, questions also need to be asked on whether it is a valid anywhere in the world that people should be living in accommodation that's just 10 rupees a month or 20 rupees a month. We don't live in those times. The fees was last raised, I think, 20, 30 years ago in JNU. Surely there is a case to raise the fees. Of course, it has to be a consultative process with the students. No matter what the hike is, there will always be some form of backlash to it. Yes, JNU does perform a noble service, particularly to people who come from poorer sections. But I think what they're really looking at is avenues and opportunities to be able to open doors that would not have normally opened for them. You know, tons of students who come from the interiors of UP or Bihar or Bengal, they're looking for those opportunities. I think really the story that we should be focused on in terms of reform of the finances of higher education in the country is how do you then make finance of these 3 or 4 year courses accessible to these students. I think, you know, one of the things that you have, let's say in the Western world, is you have students have easy access to financial support, either through banks or other financial institutions. I think in India, even today, banks are reluctant to lend to students, to lend student loans, essentially, because they're not sure about getting it back. I think that issue, if we are able to address, then we will not have to deal with, you know, students coming out onto the streets to protest every fee hike or every hostel fee hike. And then, of course, we've got the big international story. We're focusing on the neighborhood for a change. And we've got a big election that happened in Sri Lanka. It's a small country, yes, but it has huge ramifications for India because the new president, Gotabaya Rajapaksa, who is the younger brother of the former president, Mahinda Rajapaksa, has been elected. It's been a decisive mandate in his favor, 52% of the national vote compared to, I think, 40-41% to his immediate rival, Sajid Premadasa of the UNP. I think this marks the sort of formal return of the Rajapaksa family back into the corridors of power. And it's been very interesting because Gotabaya Rajapaksa essentially ran on a national security campaign. The Easter bombings that happened in Sri Lanka, in which more than 250 people were killed, that was really the number one issue that he ran on. And it was an issue that had a lot of takers. It found a lot of resonance on the campaign trail. And we have seen this, you know, in other countries in the neighborhood and beyond, where strongmen who run on very tough national security credentials are acceptable to a large majority. But at the same time, there are also fears in the minority population. In Sri Lanka's case, both the Tamils in the north as well as the Muslims in the east have not voted overwhelmingly, or have not voted in a majority in favor of Gotabaya Rajapaksa. His majority is largely coming from the Sinhala Buddhist dominated west and southern parts of Sri Lanka. He has a country that is divided. He has a country that is wounded. He has a country that is in need of healing. And he has said the right things, definitely, in his inauguration. He was just sworn into office today. He said the right things, that he will take along every Sri Lankan, irrespective of race or religion, and irrespective of whether they voted for Gotabaya or against Gotabaya. It'll also have huge ramifications for India, because remember the last time when the Rajapakshas were voted out, when Mahinda was voted out in 2015, he had accused, and Gotabaya also had accused, of the Indian intelligence agency, RAW, of having orchestrated a sort of a coup in Sri Lanka and then bringing in Maithripala Sirisena and Ranil Wickremesinghe's government. Now I think it's just a matter of time before the parliament is dissolved and fresh parliamentary elections are called for. But I think India also has to be careful about a Gotabaya presidency, because Gotabaya, we know in his previous avatar as defense secretary, and his brother in his previous avatar as president, were very favorably inclined and very favorably disposed to Chinese and to Chinese investment. So the Hambantota port that came up was during Mahinda's previous term. The huge city that they're building offshore in Colombo, again, was the project was signed when the Rajapakshas were in power. So the fear in South Block, for example, is whether there will be a more pronounced tilt towards China. The current dispensation, the new dispensation in Sri Lanka, has said the right things. They have said that China is going to be just another trading partner, just like the US or Europe, but India is actually going to be almost like a blood relation. Yes, you know, the proof of the pudding is going to be in the eating. I'll be very closely, very keenly following some of the developments there with this new administration, the first countries they'll be visiting, the policies that they'll be signing, the projects that they'll be signing, and really, you know, the pullback that happened on both Hambantota and some of the other Chinese investments in Sri Lanka. Is there going to be a reversal of that pullback as we saw during the Sirisena administration? So all of these pointers, I think, are going to be very keenly watched here in Delhi. And also the relationship that Gotabaya develops with the Prime Minister, his team, whoever the Foreign Minister may be, will develop with our Foreign Minister, S. Jaishankar. I think it's going to be very interesting to see how this relationship plays out, particularly in the context of, rapidly spreading Chinese tentacles in the South Asian region. So these are the stories that we're going to be focusing on tonight at 9:25 on Brass Tacks. For viewers of the show, you know this. It's 0% debate, 100% news. We're just focused on the news and nothing else. So do join us weeknights 9:25 on CNN News 18 for Brass Tacks.
No debate, no bias, just the news. Brass Tacks with Zucker Jacob.